Inflation and how it can hit lower-income people harder. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Today, Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, the fellow who turns up and down the heat on the U.S. economy, is testifying in Congress for a second day. On day one yesterday, there was a teachable moment about the Fed's dual role of keeping the job market strong while keeping inflation down. Following this closely is Diane Swonk, the chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton, and a frequent voice here on Thursdays. Good morning.
Good morning.
There's a really interesting question that was posed to the Fed chief yesterday that caught your attention. It was about how inflation affects poorer people.
Exactly. One of the questions was the gap in inflation between how low-income households and the costs they face versus higher-income households, which there has been some research on this, and it's really important in understanding how the economic aggregates that the Fed targets are not necessarily representative of what many Americans are experiencing. Low-income households have to pay higher costs on things than many higher-income households, and the things they buy are more limited in their ability. You know, they have to pay a certain amount for shelter. They have to pay a certain amount for medical care. Many of them are worried about not even being able to afford their prescription drugs. So their experience with inflation is very different than the reality that the Fed chairman is trying to target. What's also important is that this particular Fed chairman has sort of stepped out of the traditional comfort zone of the Fed and said, we'd like to reach more people and reach more of the public with this expansion by running this marathon of expansion longer and engaging more people on the sidelines. One of the hard things the Fed faces is if they were to raise the inflation target to get a little heat in the economy with more people in the economy, that extra heat could burn those at the lowest end of the income strata.
So there's that tension, almost that terrible irony. But just so we understand the principle here, lower income people would have higher fixed costs, less discretionary spending. You just got to have a roof over your head. You have to buy the food that you need. And what? You may not be able to find lower prices by driving further to a cheaper Costco or something?
Or you may not have a credit card to be able to get access to cheaper costs online that many wealthy people can get access to. You also may not be able, in some rural areas, we saw a major shift in inflation once Walmart hit a critical mass because it lowered inflation for people in rural areas. The problem is there's still few and far between, and many of these, even in inner cities, they don't have access to cheaper, less expensive goods in one of these big box retailers that they could if they were living closer to that. And I think that's another issue. It's a double whammy for many lower-income households. The corner retail store may be a cute and lovely thing of the past and something they're still dealing with, and they may know the person who owns it, but the cost of toothpaste at that store is a lot more than it is somewhere else.
Yeah, it can be. Well, it always makes us uncomfortable whenever we say, inflation is so low, it's not so low for everybody. So Diane Swonk at Grant Thornton, thank you so much for the briefing.
Thank you.
There are about a million foreign students in U.S. colleges, yet the student visa system is a cumbersome one. It's estimated that approvals for student visas have fallen 6% since 2014. WBUR in Boston produced this report by Carrie Young.
When Laura Vidiella graduated from Boston University last May, she wanted to get a few years of professional experience in the computer science field before returning home to Spain. So she applied for a work permit under her student visa called Optional Practical Training and got a job lined up for midsummer. Vidiella says the process was not easy.
It was so stressful because there's always like that what if.
It took almost 4 months for the application to be approved, which is about a month longer than she was told to expect. That meant she had to ask her new employer to push back her start date without knowing if she'd be approved.
They understood, so they waited, and it just made my start a little bit more hectic because I didn't have time to like prepare before going to the client side for this consulting company.
U.S. Customs and Immigration Services said in an email that delays like Vidiella's were due to an unexpected increase in applications. They've since devoted more resources to the issue. Still, university leaders in Massachusetts say the delays are coming from all parts of the system, whether it's for the F1 student visa or that early work training permit. Jean Kelly is with Boston University's International Student Office.
We're seeing larger numbers of visa applicants taking longer now.
Today, more than 10,600 students from 130 countries attend the school.
We're concerned that if it continues to be more difficult, it could end up impacting enrollment in the future.
The State Department, which handles F1 visas, says application times can vary and that national security is its top priority. Rachel Banks, with the Association of International Educators, says foreign students bring a lot of different resources to an area, including money.
There's definitely an impact that international students have on local economies.
Her organization estimates that nationwide, international students contribute about $39 billion to the economy by spending money on things like tuition, rent, and entertainment. But Banks says there's growing competition for that money.
While we're increasing hoops that immigrants and visitors to this country are having to jump through, we're watching our competitors, namely Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom, change their policies to be more attractive.
The Institute of International Education estimates that last year, new foreign student enrollment fell by 6%. In Boston, I'm Carrie Young for Marketplace.
Checking the markets in early trading here, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average down, well, it's just actually turned positive. It's up 5 points for what that's worth. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.